About that time, the one-week hiatus is over, and we are back on PZ85 Sports on the Podzilla 1985 network, podzilla1985.com. I'm Cody Sandusky. I'm very glad to be back for this July 23rd, 2016 episode. Took a week away from the microphone. Boy, what a time did I pick to step away for a vacation. Lots of news coming out. The UFC 200 card was interesting and happened, but the news afterward is really the big piece. We'll get into what happened with Brock Lesnar and what it means for both his WWE and his UFC career. Of course, the minor league baseball lawsuit for pay we discussed a little bit ago had some breaking news happen on Thursday and Friday. We'll go over what happened in that lawsuit and how it could be crumbling underneath the minor league players' feet as we speak. The Baseball Hall of Fame ceremony is this weekend, so I'll do a little bit of an ode to Ken Griffey Jr. and the inspiration he had on my fandom, as well as discussing anything else that comes up in this 30-minute episode. We're going to keep it pretty short this week, so we'll dive in pretty quickly. Just want to acknowledge the reason for the break last week. Took a vacation and also was able to propose and propose successfully. So very excited about that. My now fiance did say yes. The story was interesting. I can share it at some point in the future, maybe, or share it if you meet me in person. It was quirky, but that fits us very well. And it was partially my fault that it was quirky, but it wouldn't fit my narrative in life, and I think our narrative in a relationship, if it didn't have a weird glitch or two. So very excited about that, very excited to be able to do that. And now we're back into the fold. It's a re-entry kind of episode here, so jumping right in. No need for further delay. UFC 200 was a thing. That's about the nicest thing I can say about it. UFC 200 was a thing. It did happen. And the results were, well, a bit shaky. We'll go over just from the bottom to the top of the card like we did in our preview and our predictions with Dalton and I. No, I have not done the numbers, although if my math is correct, I believe Dalton did win. Although I got the Brock Lesnar fight correct. Little did I know what that meant later on, but we'll go in. Jim Miller defeated Takanori Gomi in the first round by TKO. Gegard Mousasi defeated Thiago Santos by a TKO in the first round. And Joe Lauzon defeated Diego Sanchez in the first round. So the UFC Fight Pass was really the winner of the pay-per-view because those who subscribed to UFC Fight Pass got three great, quick fights. The longest one was the Mousasi-Santos fight that went 4 minutes and 32 seconds in the first round. Little did most of us know that almost everything else on this card would go to the judges. Get onto the prelim card on Fox Sports 1. Sage Northcutt defeated Enrique Marin unanimous decision after 3 rounds. TJ Dillashaw defeated Asun Sal unanimous in 3 rounds. Kevin Gastelum defeated Johnny Hendricks in a unanimous, and same for Juliana Pena defeating Kat Zingano in a unanimous decision in the women's bantamweight. Now the main card, Cain Velasquez defeated Travis Brown in the first round. 3 seconds left in that round. Rocked Brown was able to finish the job before the bell, and then the decisions came back. Jose Aldo defeated Frankie Edgar in a unanimous after 5 rounds to retain that interim featherweight title, so now it's seeing will win or will that fight between he and Conor McGregor take place. Daniel Cormier in the last-minute fight against Anderson Silva, the replacement for, of course, John Jones in that one. Cormier retained in, well, it's a non-title fight, but he did win the light heavyweight fight in 3 rounds by unanimous decision. Brock Lesnar, as we said, defeated Mark Hunt in a unanimous decision. It's tainted now, but it happened. He won. And then Amanda Nunes, shocking both of us, I believe. Dalton and I picked Miesha Tate, Cupcake, to do this one. First round submission, 3 minutes and 16 seconds. So Amanda Nunes is now your women's bantamweight champion. And we talked about it a little bit then that I thought it was very interesting. And unlike some commentators, I thought it was beneficial that this women's bantamweight division is so volatile in the sense that champions can come from anywhere. They can have a fight at any time. And you think, okay, this isn't guaranteed that they're going to retain. Obviously, in this case with Cupcake, that was the case. She was not able to retain. At this point, unfortunately for Miesha Tate, she falls down the ladder in terms of the bantamweight division because now you have Rousey. If she comes back, Holly Holm will definitely put her name in the fold for getting into a fight with Nunes to get this title or an opportunity to get her title back that she won from Rousey. Tate just hasn't been able to hold her own anytime she's climbed toward the top of that ladder, and it continues on. So congratulations to Amanda Nunes for winning that title. But let's go into the primary news of what happened afterward, which was, oh, hey, remember those drug tests you take? Or that Brock Lesnar was allegedly not, or given a pass to not take because he's tested by the WWE? Well, he failed them. Two of them, as a matter of fact. Brock Lesnar, he failed one out of competition, which was on June 28th. So the USADA flagged him for it. He said he would get to the bottom of it. UFC said, of course, we'll investigate and see what happens. News comes out, and this is on July 19th, so earlier this week, that he failed the second drug test from the sample that was taken on the night of his fight. So UFC 200 on July 9th, Pat takes the test, and it's flagged for the same substance that was in the out-of-competition sample. The UFC officials announced it Tuesday after being notified by the USADA, the United States Anti-Doping Agency. Quote, the UFC organization was notified today that the USA Anti-Doping Agency has informed Brock Lesnar that his in-competition sample collection from July 9, 2016 at UFC 200 has tested positive for the same substance as his previously announced out-of-competition collection on June 28, 2016. So, of course, the investigation is going to happen. The Nevada State Athletic Commission retains jurisdiction over the matter as it was collected in Las Vegas, and quote, consistent with all previous potential anti-doping violations, additional information will be provided at the appropriate time as the process moves forward. So much like John Jones, who's now facing a 2-year suspension, possibly, for his anti-doping thing, Brock Lesnar's likely going to face the same thing. Now, for Brock Lesnar, it's a bit different because he's not going to be in his early 30s if he gets a 2-year suspension and tries to come back. He's going to be 40. So for Brock Lesnar, this could be, now mind you, he's no typical human. We've talked about the beast incarnate. He's a freak of a human being just in terms of his size and his genetic makeup. At this point, July 12th, 1977, is his birthday. So he will be 41 if he is banned at this point going into, so 41, 42, somewhere in that range, depending on appeals and when the suspension were to take place. Brock Lesnar, from what is being reported by MMAfighting.com, of course, Helwani and his group trying to get in on this. This one's from Mark Raimondi. It's said that Brock Lesnar allegedly failed the test for hydroxyclomiphene, which is a substance known to be an anti-estrogen agent, which is actually something that John Jones was popped for as well. So both of these guys come off looking pretty bad in the situation. Of course, an anti-estrogen medication or supplement, whatever it may be, supposed to boost your testosterone production. It's normally used in an infertility situation, and I know that in the case of Brock Lesnar, anyway, he is married to Sable, former WWE diva. They have kids, so there may be something in there for him, although I don't think it's going to fly in the face of the Nevada State Athletic Commission as well as the USADA. So for me personally, I have no doubt in my mind that Brock Lesnar is going to face some form of suspension from the UFC. The WWE, on the other hand, it does not look like anything is going to happen. For anything that's been said, of course, report from WhatCulture.com, The Observer, Dave Meltzer, the longtime, well-respected writer in the wrestling community, everything is saying that there's no punishment coming from the WWE. We addressed it on Wednesday on Pro Wrestling Unscripted with Asa Shannon. We talked about this a bit, and that was our discussion with it. It didn't happen under the WWE watch, so why would they bother going through the wellness policy to punish or suspend him? At this juncture, Brock Lesnar is still scheduled to face Randy Orton at their SummerSlam pay-per-view in August. So from everything it looks like right now, the WWE is not going to mess with this because, as we said, it didn't happen under their watch. It didn't happen under their testing regime or their testing policy, so there's nothing for them to go off of. This is going to rest solely in the UFC's hands and in the Nevada State Athletic Commission, the USADA. It's all going to be on the professional fighting side of things, and I think it's going to lead to a suspension. I think it's going to lead to Brock Lesnar being out for 2 years, and at this point, the question for him is going to be, how much of the purse does he lose? With it being a $2.5 million purse, Mark Hunt, from the beginning, as soon as this out-of-competition sample was flagged, he came in like a bull in a china shop. I want half of his purse. I want that money. And now at this point, he wants all of it. He wants the entirety of it, which is bad because if he gets it, Brock Lesnar still has to pay a fine to the Nevada State Athletic Commission. He has to pay a fine from the UFC from somebody. And that's going to be difficult for him if he takes all that money out. Dude's got money. I'm not saying he can't pay it, but it's going to be a hard pill to swallow that you went into UFC 200 and somehow lost money when it was supposed to be a big money-making venture for you. I know it sucks for them, but that's the punishment you get if you do the dirty work. You do the illegal thing in your sport, you get popped for it, so that's on you. Don't know where it's going to go, but I don't think it will look pretty for Brock Lesnar as things move forward. Moving forward from UFC 200 into the minor league baseball news, the minor league baseball group that was suing Major League Baseball under the Fair Labor Standards Act for equal pay has been dealt a major blow. This coming from Vice Sports in their reports earlier today. They found out on Thursday that the class action certification was stripped away from the lawsuit. They received it provisionally last fall, but now that has been removed. The quote from Grant Brocious, the lawyer for the class action, the former class action group, says, quote, "We're exploring all avenues, even the possibility of appeal right now. We'll certainly continue to represent our clients and pursue the litigation." So what does that mean? Well, here's what it means in terms of where the judge is coming from. He ruled, and this is in layman's terms, I guess, or as best as I can describe it from what I've read, because all of these players played for different organizations, for different teams under different rules, of course, playing in different levels of minor league baseball, there's no clean way to across the board rule on this case or to apply the ruling of this case to every player. Essentially, it says they're not on equal ground, therefore they can't rule in that manner. I understand where they're coming from with that. You have a low A or a rookie A player who was drafted out of high school like the 50th round, didn't think he could have gone anywhere in baseball, versus a triple A player who still played kind of poorly but went on to play 12 years in Major League Baseball. There's a range, a wild range in that situation. So I can't argue the judge's ruling in a logical sense. It just means that this situation is going to be deemed much differently and faced in a much different way by the now individual players who will try to sue Major League Baseball for increased pay. Grant Brocious, as we said, his law firm is in St. Louis, and now the question is, do they represent everyone individually, or what can they do? They are, as I said, going into an appeal process to gain that class action classification back. I don't think it's going to happen. It stinks, but I don't think they're going to get that back. It makes sense what the judge said. So where does this battle go from here? I'm not sure. We talked about it a bit about a month ago, I believe, about this lawsuit, what it meant, and what the merits were for it on both sides. But I will say that Major League Baseball and Minor League Baseball's representatives have done nothing but vilify themselves further in the buildup through this case and what they've said about this case. Now, this statement's from a couple of years ago at the baseball winter meetings in 2014, but Stan Brand, Minor League Baseball's vice president and chief lobbyist in Washington, D.C., turned it into what Vice Sports dubbed a life-or-death referendum on the sport. Here's the quote from Baseball America at the time. Quote, "I will ask you to heed the clarion call, man the battle stations, and carry the message to Congress loudly and clearly. The value of grassroots baseball and our stewardship of the game needs to be protected against the onslaught of these suits." Half of those words aren't used outside of a Game of Thrones script. Let's just declare that right now. Heed the clarion call. I get for flowery language and wanting to make yourself sound very astute. I like doing that sometimes. I do the same thing. That's not a way to appeal to your constituents or to make yourself look better to the people you're employing or, well, trying to fight back from in terms of fair pay in your minor league baseball players. The onslaught of these suits. I really do think I heard Tyrion Lannister say that, and that's not a compliment. So I don't know where this is going to go moving forward. Of course, we have to sit tight and see how the news develops, but it's not looking good for minor league baseball players wanting increased pay. But you're also damaging the reputation for yourself if you're Major League Baseball or Minor League Baseball, the organization partially involved or owned by MLB, in appealing or making yourself look good to your employees as well as just outsiders from the sports world. Without intending to, it's been a bit of a negative episode today. I know I've talked about in times past wanting to combat that, but we talk about the social issues and the things happening in sports, both statistically and otherwise. So these kinds of things come up, and unfortunately, sometimes the news is more bad than good. But as we go into the second half of this podcast, we said about a 30-minute episode of this week, I want to focus on a positive thing, something that may uplift you, or if you're like me, maybe reminisce about the players of your youth and seeing them immortalized in whatever form or fashion they are in their sport. This is Major League Baseball's Hall of Fame weekend. I say Major League Baseball, it's the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. It is the induction ceremony weekend. Currently, there are pictures going up on Instagram and Twitter of the two inductees for this season, Ken Griffey Jr. and Mike Piazza, in Cooperstown, New York, doing the celebrity thing, of course, doing the press conference, playing golf, all of those things. Ken Griffey Jr., it's a lot of what he's joked about in different articles, and I'll actually share the article on Twitter or attach it to the bottom of the post when I post this on my page and on Facebook.com/CodySanduskySports. He's been swinging the golf clubs a lot. He doesn't swing the bat much anymore because he says it messes up his golf swing for a couple days. So you know that appeals to Ken Griffey Jr. But we're getting into a time where I'm 24 years old. I turn 25 next month. So I'm right in that quarter-life crisis range, as John Mayer talked about in his songs on the Room for Squares album. But I'm in a place where I'm starting to see the players that I watched growing up, or at least in the early part of my childhood, players whom I really enjoyed and maybe looked up to and thought were fun to see, going into the Hall of Fame. They're retiring, they're stepping away from the game, and now that first group is starting to receive their due reward if they were a great player, which is being inducted into the Hall of Fame and being remembered as one of the all-time greats. Ken Griffey Jr., despite the injuries in the second part of his career when he went to Cincinnati, was one of those first players for me. I don't talk about family a whole lot on the podcast, of course, not to put in the names of the innocent, so to speak, associate them with me, or just not because they're not involved in this project. But I have a brother. He's 11 years older than I am. So in Ken Griffey Jr.'s career, this may be even more so for him than it is for me, this happening this weekend, because he's in his mid-30s. He watched Ken Griffey Jr. as a teenager. You know, those first initial home run races. He had a home run blitz in 1994 before the season was canceled, where Ken Griffey Jr. could have very well broken the all-time home run record at the time. He had 40 home runs in early August when the strike ended the season, which, of course, probably robbed us of a Montreal Expos championship and may have been no small part in what had moved the Nationals to Washington. Be that as it may, you saw history happening even in the early parts of Ken Griffey Jr.'s career, and it's at that point I was 3 years old. Yeah, I didn't see that as much. I saw more of the Cincinnati side where his body started failing it because he was such an athlete who put it all to the pedal to the floor. He moved it all at one time. He was just 100% at all times. But it's interesting to see this kind of player, this Ken Griffey Jr. for me, being one of the first players I remember like clicking and associating with a sport growing up. Ken Griffey Jr. was baseball. Of course, he had his Super Nintendo game and then his N64 games, you know, Major League Baseball starring Ken Griffey Jr. I remember renting that at the time. The first two baseball games I remember playing, I rented ESPN's Baseball Tonight. Wasn't that great. For me, I missed bases loaded on the NES, but for me, it was Frank Thomas's Big Hurt Baseball and then Ken Griffey Jr., Major League Baseball on the Super Nintendo. So you hear about this guy, he's on the video game. It's like, hey, that's cool. I know that name. And he's a guy that's just consuming. He's got a smile. He's called the Kid. He wears his hat backwards, although he did change that a little bit as he went older in his career because he wasn't the Kid anymore. He was just Junior. I understand you can't hold your childhood monikers forever, but it's a persisting image of this guy who just looked like he was always having fun playing the game, you know, always having a smile on, acting like this game is the best thing that's ever happened to him. And of course, you think about the prevailing image in the ALDS in 1995, the slide for him going into the plate after the hit by Edgar Martinez, coming from first to score, big play, saving Seattle baseball, more or less, the King Dome, now allowing for Safeco Field to be built, a field he didn't really get to reap the fruits of as he was traded to Cincinnati to be closer to his family, and all of those things are understandable. But Ken Griffey Jr. existed in my mind and my younger years, like my childhood years, like I'm talking like 4 to 10, as a guy who just enjoyed the game. He was a fun player to watch. He was exuberant. He smiled. And of course, we had, for me, 1998, and yes, we recorded in Southeast Missouri, so we had the home run chase. We had Mark McGwire. We had Sammy Sosa. Ken Griffey Jr. was kind of on the outside looking in that 98 season, but he played well and he hit very well. I think 54 home runs was his number. Don't have it pulled up in front of me. But he's a guy that you associate with just enjoying the game he plays, a game that's for kids. You know, we talk about that a lot in sports. In my broadcast, I talk about it. But it's a game for kids, or a game that we associate, we learn from as kids growing up. You play baseball, you play football, basketball, you kill time with friends, however you do it. And this is a guy who loved it and played it with an energy that gave him a nickname of the Kid for a period of time in his younger years. So to see that player develop, grow, go through some battles and injuries, by the way, 56 home runs was his number in 1998 during his all-star stretch for many years from 1990 to 2000. It was just fun to watch him play, and now to see him step away, yeah, in not the most glamorous fashion, and they talk about that in that Sports Illustrated article, is where it starts, where he just left the Mariners in 2010, not in a bad way, but he just decided he was done, packed up his car after a game, and drove back to Florida, went home. He felt like he didn't have it in him anymore, it wasn't his best being given to the game, so it was time to step away. And yeah, that stinks for us as fans, but that's what humanity does. That's what this flesh and bone does. It fails you. You can't have it with you forever. You can't play at that accelerated level if you're one of the best at what you do. At some point, it starts to falter. And for him, he just decided that it was time. And it's a unique way to go, but it's a very Ken Griffey Jr. way to go, I think. He's a guy who was very big in the spotlight, but tended to keep to himself and, you know, wasn't this like effervescent in the media all the time saying anything, doing whatever. A guy just enjoyed his sport. And to see him inducted in the Hall of Fame is, as I said, a unique thing. Because it is one of the first players I associated with a sport. You know, you have those baseball cards. You have whatever you collect. You have your memorabilia. And you look back and you determine, this is what stood out to me. Or this is what started getting me hooked on this thing. And Ken Griffey Jr. was that for baseball for me. Or one of the contributing factors. Again, the 1998 home run chase played a big part. You know, Mark McGwire, big guys doing whatever. But for Ken Griffey Jr., looking back now, is a guy who didn't do any of the drugs that were a part of that. We have a guy who was truly a great player, and if he had not been bit by the injury bug as hard as he was in Cincinnati, this is a guy that we're talking about easily having one of the best statistical careers of all time. And there's just no denying that. You look at his numbers for his career just in general, 524 doubles. You look at some of these things, and I'm trying to pull them all up for you as my phone decides to fight me. 630 home runs, 1,836 RBIs. It's just a killer career, a 284 average over 22 seasons. Just phenomenal to go back and look at those raw numbers. And this is a guy, again, in the dead center of the steroid era, not doing steroids, not being a part of that. He was a guy, he wasn't your Barry Bonds type in terms of you saw his body just morph ridiculously in a short period of time. Ken Griffey Jr. was Ken Griffey Jr. He looked like the same kid who was athletic. He put on some muscle when he was younger. But remember, he came into Major League Baseball like 19 years old. He was coming fresh out of high school as the number one pick. And as some articles note, and I will confirm it just looking back, the greatest number one pick in Major League Baseball history. By far. I don't even think it's really a contest, but the greatest single number one draft pick in MLB history. So coming in, of course, he had to put some muscle on his frame, and he did that naturally and, of course, started hitting his stride, did well for himself. I mean, in 1990, he hit his first All-Star game, and then the 90s just went, and other than missing, you know, half of the 95 season with a broken wrist trying to make a catch on the wall at the Kingdom, had a stretch of what we may consider one of the best 10-year runs in Major League Baseball ever. And to see him inducted this weekend is going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be really bittersweet. 1:30 Eastern time, 12:30 Central time. It's going to be on the MLB Network. You see him and Mike Piazza, another guy that, as we know, I don't have as much affinity for him because he played in places I didn't get to see. He played for the LA Dodgers like 2 weeks for the Marlins and then got flipped to the New York Mets, where, of course, we saw him on the stage in the 2000 World Series and the Subway Series between the Yankees and the Mets. It was really fun to see him, but for me, it's a unique moment in my sports fandom. And I'm sure other generations have done this. I've talked to other generations that have done this. And then future generations will do this. My nephew, who plays baseball now, he's going to see this happen with Mike Trout and Bryce Harper. Maybe Jose Fernandez, Giancarlo Stanton. You're going to see these guys who you grew up watching. These guys who you mimicked. Or maybe tried to make your motion look more like in your pitching motion. Or maybe, you know, try to emulate their batting stance a little bit. You're going to see this happen. I admit it. My batting stance when I play softball is partially emulated from Ken Griffey Jr. and from Gary Sheffield. You know, that wiggle of the bat back and forth. I do a little bit of the Ichiro thing where I pull up the left sleeves, I pull back into my batting stance. Those are the guys I saw growing up, and so I emulate them. Future generations are going to do the same. Like I said, with Trout, with Stanton, with Harper. Previous generations did it with maybe Jackie Robinson, Stan Musial, Ted Williams, Craig Biggio, Jeff Bagwell. Seeing a lot of guys trying to emulate Jeff Bagwell, that crouched down, like, squat stance. Those are memories. Those are things that happen. And for me, it's a unique moment in fandom to see that come to fruition with Ken Griffey Jr. going into the Hall of Fame this weekend. It's going to be a bittersweet experience because, of course, we haven't seen him play in 5-6 years now. And it's the single greatest, highest vote value in Hall of Fame induction history. Of course, not the 100%, but we can go into those merits later, though, whether it's a flaw or not, whatever. But it's really awesome to see Ken Griffey Jr. getting this and to see a part of childhood just go on to its final stage of remembrance being in the Hall of Fame. It's going to be fun, so tune in for that. We're going to talk about Rio as we move forward. We are toward the tail end of it for 24 minutes in. I said it'd be a shorter episode this week, and that's where we're at. We're going to get back into the flow of things. I apologize for maybe cutting it a little shorter this time around, but we are approaching the Olympics, of course, in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. Everything crazy going on. It's don't really know what to approach with that topic, because it is such a large scale competition with a lot of sports that are off the beaten path. I mean, how many times do you see archery on SportsCenter? How many times do you hear about kayaking in a professional sports realm? It doesn't, but I know it's very exciting, of course, you know, for your whatever country you may represent or whatever country you may hail from. Of course, us being in the United States on this PZ85 network, there's maybe some rah-rah USA along with it. We're going to see what happens. I think the basketball team looks very good. The swimmers are coming back. You know, Michael Phelps, of course, the face of USA swimming and really the face of Olympic swimming these last few Olympics, is going to be right back in the swing of things. Usain Bolt did very well in London yesterday. I think he won the 200 meter. Apparently there's a great video with a fan having like an emotional breakdown moment receiving his shoes from that run. We'll look into that. We'll see if we can share that on Twitter at Cody Sandusky, or you know, put it on the Facebook page, facebook.com at Cody Sandusky Sports and at Podzilla 1985 on Facebook. Very fun to be back. Of course, as we move on as well, the NFL's coming up. The NBA Summer League is going on. My Chicago Bulls won the Summer League title out in Vegas. Valentine, looking very good. He and Doug McDermott are on one of the scout teams for Team USA's basketball. So it's an exciting time for me as a basketball fan. It's just a good time of year, guys. It's just a good time in terms of there's action going on in baseball. There's preparation going on in terms of the other sports for their seasons to start in the later fall. The Canadian Football League is already in full swing, so go Ottawa Red Blacks. I need to start probably following the Winnipeg Blue Bombers since they're our closest team here in the Southeast Missouri region, as if any team in Canada is close, but you get what I'm saying. A lot of fun things going on, so I'm very excited. Before I go, I know we've talked about in times past, you know, police violence, civilian violence. How do we address it? How does it play into sports? What do you do in those situations? And of course, the WNBA we talked about, or at least if I didn't, here you go. Multiple players have been making statements via like wearing black t-shirts and things like that. The WNBA responded by fining them for breaking the uniform code. Teams are still going out anyway and doing that. You don't know how to handle it, don't know how to represent it, don't know how to maybe build some of those bridges or develop those relationships. I want to give credit, and I did on the Saturday Morning Express show, 10 a.m. Saturday mornings on CMO ESPN 92.9 FM, 1220 a.m. We gave credit to it on the broadcast since it's a local university, but I also want to give credit on this podcast to Coach Matukowicz and the entirety of the Southeast Missouri State University football team, staff, the players, all of them, for what happened this Thursday. So, Coach Took, seeing the news, and this has been talked about in different interviews on the Southeast Missouri and a few other places you may see it online, Coach Took reading about seeing the violence against police officers or involving police officers and not knowing what to do to maybe cultivate a better relationship in this area. He decides to approach his leadership team, Dante Vandeven, who is a quarterback at Jackson High School, which I've done some games for in the last few years, and of course is my alma mater here in Southeast Missouri, presented the idea of a flag football game with some police officials and some law enforcement officers. They continue this trend. Coach Took reached out to the Cape Girardeau Police Department on Twitter. There was a response, and we saw the fruit of that labor on Thursday at Hauk Stadium here in Cape Girardeau, Missouri. 646 people or so attended. It was a very hot night, but a very exciting night. I wish I would have been able to attend. I was actually here at the studio working on a few things. There was a flag football competition. Four different teams involving Southeast Missouri State players and police officers and law enforcement officials in our region. Coming out, it was a fundraiser to back Backstoppers, which is a charity that assists in the lives of police and fire officials in our region, Missouri and Illinois. Just a very great event, and it shows you what the power of sports can do. The power of reaching out across whatever diverse lines we have, you know, young men and police officials in a climate where there's nothing but antagonistic mentalities. It's very heartwarming, very touching, and I'm very excited to be associated with. It is my alma mater, Southeast Missouri State, so I guess I can say that even as an alumni. Very excited, a very awesome situation going on there. Very proud to see it happen. Glad for those that attended. I hope it becomes a yearly thing. I think that would be really fun. You bridge that gap between these two different cultures, you know, young athletes, police officers, in a time in a world where, you know, let's acknowledge, a number of CMO's football athletes are black males. And there was even addressed in the article that some of the athletes weren't as comfortable with the situation, didn't know how to feel about it. But there are bridges being built. There are bridges being reestablished between young men in the community, between law enforcement officials, showing that antagonistic mentality, that anger, that hatred, that vitriol we're seeing in the world right now, especially in the United States concerning police violence against police or coming from police, that isn't the end-all be-all of the story. And that doesn't have to be the end-all be-all of the story. And it's very exciting. As I said, it's an awesome thing to see locally. Hope it grabs some more attention regionally, not just for attention like of the football team, like, oh, look at that good football team, but maybe seeing some of those brighter stories that we don't catch very often in the news, whether it be sports or otherwise, get some of the negativity cleared out and show what positive things can be happening in your community and in sports. So kudos to Coach Tom Matukiewicz for the effort he put in, his leadership team and the entire Southeast Missouri State football staff and team, as well as the law enforcement officials around the area, backstoppers. Kudos to all of you guys. It's very awesome. Very happy to say that I'm an alumni of that university and that I work and live in a region currently where that kind of thing happens. So that's awesome. Congratulations to you all. That's all for this episode of PZ85 Sports. Of course, going into how you can reach out to us, you can find me on Twitter at Cody Sandusky, S-A-N-D-U-S-K-Y, C-O-D-Y on that first name, on Twitter. Feel free to reach out, share your thoughts on the show or any sports topics that are going on. Love to talk to you guys. You can email us, podzilla1985@gmail.com. Just put sports in the subject, at least in part of your subject, so we know who to delegate that email out to. Again, love to hear your feedback. You can find us on Facebook at Podzilla1985. You can also find my page at Cody Sandusky Sports on Facebook.com. Go ahead and like that page. I post news stories from sports, different thoughts. I post these podcasts on there, which, by the way, reminds me, I don't want to go out of this podcast without remembering Dennis Green. I know I mentioned I would mention it on the show, and I hate to tag it on to the end, but Dennis Green, very influential coach, of course, coach of the Minnesota Vikings in the early to mid-90s, moved on to the Arizona Cardinals, a great coach just in the scheme of things, but also an influential groundbreaker in terms of being a black coach in the NFL. Don't want his memory to just be, they are who we thought they were, and we let them off the hook. Of course, a great quote to remember. It's a fun moment in press conferences, and it comes up in kind of the follies or the, you know, the jokes about what press conferences can go wrong. But I don't want that to be just the memory. A great coach, loved by his athletes and his teammates, anyone in that situation. So Dennis Green, may he rest well, passing away yesterday, actually, Friday the 22nd, of cardiac arrest. So remember, you can follow us on Facebook to see stories like that. Hopefully a lot better stories, brighter stories in terms of the good things in sports as well. At Podzilla1985 to follow all of our podcasts. A great PWU this week talking about the WWE draft as well as discussing what picks were done that we hated, that we liked. A lot more of the former than the latter. Remember, that's not as safe for work, so be careful going into that one. Always a fun conversation. Trainwreck Thursday talking about Ghostbusters. Just a good week of podcasts, so definitely tune in to all of that. Of course, tomorrow Nerd Up will be up. Jesse and the gang will be talking about whatever is going on in comics and in video games and maybe movies. I think they may have a little more discussion about the Ghostbusters film. We'll see how it goes. Go to patreon.com, search Podzilla1985. Remember, you can back us on there, support us, allow us to buy better equipment, and bring you this quality entertainment that we hope you enjoy. Redbubble.com, search Podzilla1985, the apparel and the gear that Lindsay does the art for. Love that stuff. The Podzilla1985 Sports logo t-shirt is on there. Pick one up. Until next week, though, I am Cody Sandusky saying thank you for tuning in to PZ85 Sports. Stay safe, stay dry, or at least cool wherever you may be, and catch some sports this week. We'll talk to you later, guys.